to the test traffic working group. If this is not where you wanted to be, you're in the wrong room. So before we get started on the real contents, we have a few practical issues. I lost my connection to the I got my connection to the screen back, so this is the agenda. I know we have a scribe from the RIPE-NCC, I just don't remember who it is. Oh, Virgil, thanks. Minutes from the last meeting were posted this morning. They got stuck in the queue somewhere. Sorry about that. I doubt that you all have had a chance to read them, so I propose that we'll keep them open for like a week for people to comment, and then we declare them final. As you know, I'm the co-chair. The real chair, Alex Suter, hasn't been able to make it to this meeting for a couple of times now. And when I called him a couple of weeks ago, he indicated, well, this is unlikely to change in the next year or two. So we're looking for a new chair for this working group. I don't expect any volunteers to show up, but if you do want to volunteer, send me a mail. Otherwise, I'll start volunteering people or something. I don't know yet. So we do need a new chair. Interested people, contact me. And then we have four presentations this afternoon. I'm going to run a fairly tight schedule, as I've heard from people who had other commitments today. And we'll kick up with Mark from RIPE-NCC on DTM future developments. Mark, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, good afternoon. Welcome back for TTM Futures Part 2. If you were at the Tallinn meeting, you might recognize one or two of these slides. Today I'll be giving a brief recap on where we got to last time, what we've done since then, and where we plan to go to from here. The story so far. Test traffic measurements were born of an initial design in 1997 and became a fully-fledged service sometime in 2000. We operate a fully interconnected mesh of nodes and carry out measurements of delay, loss, jitter, and trace route between each of them. That was 10 years ago, so the network needs rethinking, and that's why we're here today. Why does it need replacing? When TTM was implemented, a variety of assumptions were made. We've been through these before, so I won't dwell on them, but the world has moved on, and so must we. Coupled with these assumptions are a variety of problems which have limited the TTM network from growing. All of our efforts are focused on removing these blocks. This process began back at Route 52 in Istanbul with a presentation and some discussion. At Route 53, the Test Traffic Task Force was formed and began work on plans for the future of the TTM network. This May in Tallinn, we presented a draft proposal to this working group, and since then we've incorporated your feedback, finalized the proposal, and worked on some design and prototyping, some of which you'll see here today. Our vision then is to expand and maintain the network by increasing its value and usefulness to everyone. We've broken this down into five main areas of focus: network, measurements, reporting, alarms, and pricing. For the sake of completeness, I'll cover the full proposal, some of which hasn't changed since last time, but I know we're short of time, so I'll try not to go on for too long. Starting with the network architecture, this falls into three main tiers. Firstly, to ensure a strong core network, the NCC will be inserting probes into a number of interesting places. The hardware will be sponsored by us, and we will ask the host sites to contribute rack space, power, and bandwidth. To ensure we build a strong core, we'll ensure that these are placed in major ASs or at large exchange points. Secondly, the ISP-sponsored probes. This is essentially the current network with some value-added features to make them more attractive to subscribers. Finally, the third tier of inexpensive lightweight probes following the consumer broadband monitoring proposal. It makes more sense to show this visually, so here are some maps. You may have seen them before. This is a rough approximation. I don't think it's got every box at the moment on there of the current TTM network. You can see that there's heavy clustering within Europe. Under the new proposed architecture, the NCC will ensure a broad spread of TTM probes across the planet by sponsoring a number of boxes at important and interesting locations. As last time, this isn't a deployment plan, just a rough graphical visualization of what that could be. Alongside the sponsored core network, we superimpose the ISP-sponsored probes. These obviously go wherever you choose to purchase and place them. As you can see, we anticipate the network will expand far and wide beyond our service region. Finally, the CBM nodes. This obviously isn't to scale. They don't use GPS and they don't do one-way measurements. It's possible that the core TTM network could act as configuration sources or data concentrators and collectors for these probes. That covers the network. We move on now to measurements. First and foremost, the TTM is and always will be a global one-way measurement platform. We'll continue to measure delay, loss, and jitter across the full mesh, but we'll add support for custom measurement meshes. We'll also add support for OWAMP, which will allow for measurements on demand and interaction with other compatible measurement networks. Finally, we'll impose data quality checks to ensure that the results we present are actually valid. Secondly, we recognise the value of TTM as a distributed measurement network and will develop it to support a variety of ad hoc experiments, all of which must be time limited and may be local, global, or anywhere in between. And these experiments fall into two broad categories, which I'll refer to, for want of much better names, as restricted and unrestricted. Unrestricted experiments must be clearly defined but have almost unlimited scope and must be of interest to the community. The results should be made public and the proposers will get pretty much free access to the network under careful NCC supervision. We already run DNSMON within this sort of framework and many of you will be familiar with the reports that it generates. Restricted experiments will have a far more limited and restricted scope and will take the form of test modules, which will initially only be provided by the NCC. We will always err on the side of caution where there's any possibility for the network to be misused. Such tests will only be available to test box hosts who are at liberty to keep the results private. The first such planned module will support application testing for box hosts, and I'll introduce that to you now. First of all, the actual underlying infrastructure. We'll build a developer API where an XML config interface will describe the user interface and the database schema for the storage of results. Test procedures written in Perl will be distributed to all appropriate nodes, where tests will be run as per the schedule configured in the user interface. The results are collated and stored in a central database from which they can be presented in the manner described by the data presentation XML. Our example is in the form of application testing, and this is what I'm going to show you now. Firstly, adding a new ad hoc test. Create a title, set a start and end date, and a time and interval for the test. The region will probably be based on continent, but with options for custom meshes or regions based on the targets that you're interested in. On the top right, you see boxes which provide overviews of all your scheduled tests sorted by date and recently performed tests. Once you've chosen a specific test type, the XML config defines which specific parameters are applicable for the chosen protocol or test type. Here we're doing some SMTP tests, so we can choose to set SMTP auth details. Other test types would obviously have the relevant options for those protocols. On the test overview screen, we see a summary of all of our tests. Under the scheduled list, green indicates the test has been accepted automatically due to it being within permitted parameters, so it will run. The red one is illegal. This has been rejected because the frequency is too high. The white one is awaiting activation because it's a test type that requires manual approval. The table provides a summary of config options, and beneath we can see the recently run tests and their results. Remember, these sorts of tests can be public or private, so you can choose to browse the results of public tests. If multiple users all want to monitor the same thing, it makes sense to do it once and to share the results. You can choose a date range and see the list sorted by test category. You can drill down then to see the results from any test you have access to, either your own or public ones, where the overview is displayed and the results in a table, plotted on graphs, or any other supported method as configured using XML via the developer API. Moving on to reporting, we saw a lot of scope for improvements in results presentation, beginning with making things simpler and clearer, and tweaking our plots on demand while obviously retaining full access to raw data. Last time around, I showed you a slide like this to highlight the lack of user friendliness in results presentation. We've addressed this in part with gratuitous use of Google Maps. The interface you see here is actually live right now. In the simplest terms, you can view locations of test boxes on a map, including those which are on, off, under setup, or any combination of the above. You can then select two of those test boxes and view data specific to the relationship between them. So here I've selected a probe in the UK and one in Hungary. The red line links them and lets you see delay plots for traffic in either direction. If you select traceroute on the panel on the right, we attempt to use the IP geolocation data to plot the route the traffic flows. Here it appears to go through somewhere in Switzerland. It's not obvious, but you can step through the traceroute data on the bottom right to see how the path changes over time, and that gets updated in the right-hand panel and on the map. We said we'd do some work on plots, and we've done this. This is an original plot. We've made some cosmetic changes, fixed the fonts and the alignment of the fonts so that things fit a bit nicer. We've made the colors a bit easier on the eye. But these plots are still divided into four parts and a little bit bulky. So we're trying to combine all the data on shared axes in a single plot. And this is the first attempt at that, but this is still very beta. We wanted to make data more useful by simplifying the analysis of long-term trends. Here's a mock-up of the sort of user interface we plan to provide to enable this. You'll be able to select any time range. Your TTM is the default source, and you can select multiple targets, and the values will then be plotted on a graph, which might look something like this. As an example, we've used the average daily delay. So as per the configuration page, each line here represents another test box with which yours has a relationship. This makes it very easy to see spikes or long-term trends, such as if a link is slowly becoming saturated over time, or if peering changes improve or degrade connectivity. Here's another option we can provide. Each dot represents a TTM box that you have a relationship with, and we can plot delay against the number of hops. You can set custom thresholds, threshold bands to divide targets into good and poorly performing categories. So here the green ones are considered to be okay. The yellow might require investigation, and the red one shows that the link to this probe might be seriously underperforming. Our final reporting improvements are DQM, which I'll mention briefly later, and the combining of TTM data with that from other services such as RIS. I don't have anything to show you for this just yet, I'm afraid. Moving on to alarms. We really wanted to see some improvement in the alarm infrastructure to offer better user configurability, configuration, and presentation of results. Here's the current alarm setup. Each test box has its own alarm system, which is fed by the delay and loss and so on data is gathered on the network, and email notifications are sent to you as the test box user. It's a little bit inflexible and doesn't scale very well. Under the new framework, every test box will feed its data to a centralized alarm system. This data will go through our DQM process to ensure its sanity. We don't want erroneous data to trigger alarms and wake you or me up in the middle of the night. So our systems and technicians will monitor the data to ensure that it falls within expected bounds subject to a reasonable tolerance. Users will be able to configure alarms via the interface and receive notifications via a variety of means. Here we mentioned email, SMS and IM, but these will require some development work, and obviously things like SMS may come at a cost to you. In the alarms user interface, you can see the overview of all your alarms. Here, the top one will trigger if loss exceeds 85%. It's green, which means it hasn't been triggered yet. The red one is active because delay has exceeded 20 milliseconds on this link. We can look more closely at that delay alarm visually. Here on the graph, the high and low thresholds are marked with green at the bottom and blue at the top. The actual live data in red is superimposed, so you can see the exact point at which the alarm was triggered. This would obviously also have been notified via email or what other means you requested. Configuring a new alarm is as simple as choosing an alarm type, delay, loss, and so on, a reporting period, and a reporting method, email or whatever. You give each alarm a title and put in an optional description for your own information. Having chosen an alarm type, you can tweak the alarm's specific parameters, such as the source TTM box, one, more, or all destinations, and a combination of high and low thresholds. The red line on the graph shows the current delay for these links to help you configure the thresholds that you want to set. We've had a fair bit of discussion around admin and pricing, and considered a variety of options based on your feedback. Our goals are to make it easy for users to participate and to ensure the life and viability of the network. I sent the final pricing proposal to the task force last week, and I'll summarize it now. This next slide is pretty exciting, so you might like to hold on to your hats. Wait for it. At present, your upfront costs total €2,750, which gets you hardware, a GPS antenna, and cost you €1,000 in service fee annually. There's no end to this agreement, so it persists forever, costing more thousands of euros, with no consideration of hardware lifecycle replacements. We've proposed two new models, each with an initial 3-year term. Neither has any separate hardware or setup fee at the beginning. The first requires 3 annual payments of €1,800. This is a subscription-based model which includes all your hardware and service costs. The second model takes all that payment up front as a one-off of €5,000 with no recurring costs over the first 3 years. That also includes a slight discount for paying up front. After 3 years, you can dispose of or redeploy your hardware and start again with new equipment. If your hardware is still reliable, you can carry on by extending your contract for a further 1 year at a rate of €1,000, which is the annual service fee that will apply at that point in time. Then you can either start again or extend for one final year, bringing it to a total of 5 years, after which all contracts will end. You must then start again with a new server. If you still want to stick with your hardware after this point, you can keep it in the network and we'll use it for one-way measurements, but we'll stop providing software updates, service support, and we'll disable access to the advanced features such as alarms and ad hoc testing. So that's the proposal in a nutshell. What do we do next? You can make comments or ask questions right now. Then we hope to seek consensus to proceed. We will then hopefully implement this functionality in phased stages over the coming 9 to 12 months. As the task force has served its purpose, we propose then to disband it, and I'd like to thank everybody here who's taken part in that up till this point. Obviously, we'll continue to update you on progress and consult you on any deviations or changes to this plan. Finally, as each phase is launched, we always seek and encourage feedback on the tools that we offer. These will then become live services under active development, and we encourage bug reports, feature requests. Anything of that sort is always taken seriously. That concludes what I have to say. Are there any questions?
Comments, questions?
Will Hargrave, just a quick question. You're replacing the hardware. Obviously, you've got like the GPS antennas that are usually mounted on the roof and stuff like that. Is it planning to replace those on the same schedule? Because obviously that might be a bit unnecessary expense in some of the data centers we have to pay to get on the roof, etc., etc.
No, the replacement of the hardware applies only to the server. If the GPS antenna is still working, then leave it up there.
Cool.
When you come to pay again up front, if you're not taking a GPS antenna at that point, then you'll get a discount accordingly.
Okay, Brian, Neil, don't fight over.
Now come the hard
questions.
Sorry,
Brian Nisbet, HENET. I just try and let my clients go first. You know, seems fair. Couple of things. One, comments. thank you very much for putting all this together, and thank you to the TTM ops guys who finally got TT35 back up and running, all for want of a coupler. There was a mention on one of the emails about extending the service and mentioning IPv6 multicast and things like that as well as a potential thing that was being potentially going to be recordable or testable or otherwise on the test boxes. Not anytime soon, but I'm just saying it's just an expression of interest in that as well as V4 multicast.
I think if you wait a moment, you'll see a presentation about multicast.
Okay. Well, that's
V6 is already enabled across the entire network, unless you're referring to something else.
No. V6. It was V6 multicast, which was the
right.
Okay. I believe there was. It's possibly the presentation. My apologies. Another one of the thing is those ad hoc tests look fantastic, and can we have them now, please?
Soon.
Okay, thank you.
Neil O'Reilly, University College Dublin. I'm just wondering what the timescale is for introducing the new sales packaging, more or less, the new tariff and so, because I don't want to do, I want to get a test box. It's been on my list for a while, but I don't want to do the paperwork just before it's all going to change.
I think as soon as we have consensus from this forum that that's the way to go, we will implement it immediately for new subscribers. Anybody who's an existing subscriber, we will look at those individually and phase them across to the new scheme as and when it's appropriate, probably at renewal time.
Great, thanks.
Did we update the service contract already?
Not yet.
You need some time. I mean, it was a non-trivial exercise, has to write it the first time.
Okay.
So, any further comments? Anybody objecting against this scheme? Anybody in favor of it? Please raise hands. Yeah. Okay. I see a bunch of subscribers who actually like it. Okay, I guess we'll just take this consensus to the mailing list then.
Okay,
that's it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is Ruben van Staveren with the status of the current network. Okay.
So, good afternoon, after all. I'm going to bring a small update of the current status of the TTM network. Currently, we have 93 boxes enlisted in the network, but only 62 are currently measuring data for us. Well, what happened since last update? Well, at that time we had the platform upgraded, software and hardware were totally refurbished. The effort, as you have seen, is currently focused on TTM futures, prototyping new interfaces, additions to the services and other enhancements. And since this TTM service is part of the information services department, we have also been working on futures for other services we currently manage. What has happened? New boxes since the last update. We finally get some more food on the ground in the United States with the sponsored installation at ISC in Redwood City, which also means that we have a West Coast presence back again. Another one is being deployed in Brazil at Nucleo de Informatio, if I pronounce it correctly, in Sao Paulo in Brazil. We had one decommissioned box that was a box that was, I believe, was also using the CDMA technology for getting stable timing. Well, they left us, they didn't show intent to continue with the service, that's too bad. the running projects, TTM in the Russian Federation. We solved the troubles we had with the Moscow deployment, and we have sent them a new antenna, and that should be up any time. They also placed a order for another location, that's in Rostov. Those are both done by the Russian Institute for Public Networks. Another organization is wanting to deploy a test box in Chernogolovka, which I think, because I looked up in Google Maps, they're all around Moscow, as it seems. We're also still busy with TTM in South America. We have done three installations there, and we have three to go. Unfortunately, it's taking a bit more time, but we definitely try to rekindle the whole effort there. In graphic terms, it looks like this. Where's my fancy laser pointer? I plotted the status for over a whole year. That gives more context of the whole thing. This was around RIPE 54. We're currently now at RIPE 55. Unfortunately, you also see that the number of boxes that are in the on status have gone a bit down, and boxes have raised in the off status. But there was not that much change in the historic boxes that more or less cancelled their subscription. We also keep stable around the boxes in setup. Now, of course, there's an explanation for this. In the NCC, there was a reorganization place. The IS was a effect from that, substantially the ticket handling for TTM was shifted from the IT department to the S department. So people have a learning curve, they have been trained, and the handling speed should be back to usual at the next RIPE meeting. We also are going to test the antenna kits before shipping. Previously, we only did antenna kits like a ad hoc solution, as the focus was more or less on selling complete systems. But with the antenna kit getting more and more popular, that is a thing we just have to formalize, and also in our procedures. Plans. Well, of course, we're going to reduce the amount of boxes in maintenance status. We'll upgrade the existing test boxes to the latest version we have available, so we have less legacy systems in the field, which will ease maintenance and programming. We also plan to do more with new box deployments by announcing them to the users of the service that make use of the TTM platform. So that's important for the DNSMon user base too, so that now that their name server is being monitored from another location. Thing we have to decide on yet is whether we do this on demand every time when a new box is deployed, or that we do something like a periodical newsletter, where periodical can be like quarterly or per month. We have to think about that. So yeah, we improved the software, and now we will improve the servers. And that brings me to the questions.
Comments, questions? No? Then thank you, Ruben. Next up is Geert Nijpels from the M6 on what M6 is doing with TTM. Okay, control something. There you go.
Okay, I'm going to explain a bit about the use of TTM boxes at the M6. 2 years ago, I also had a little story about the test box deployment at ARM6. I will now tell you what we are currently doing with it and how we use them. So I think everybody probably knows ARM6, but quick introduction, layer 2 internet exchange. We have 4 locations. We're busy building planting a switch on a new location, EU Networks, and there will probably be test box there as well. We have 2 locations at the Watergraafsmeer, one location in the west, the Global Switch, and in southeast, Telecity 2. The metrics we use for RIPE TTM, especially the packet loss and delay values, are important to us. The jitter, we also look at it, but because of the nature of the layer 2 exchange, the boxes ping to each other, we don't use the jitter analysis a lot. The trend analysis is interesting to us. Why did we initially decide to have test boxes in our network? We decided to have 4 test boxes. Each location has 1 test box. The test boxes are connected to an edge switch, and these boxes are testing against each other. We wanted to have a view of the network as our customers see the network. So, and another requirement we had was that it was managed by a trusted third party and not by ourselves. We're publishing a quality statement on our website in which we state certain targets for the exchange, amount of packet loss, delay, and we needed, of course, a benchmark to see if we're complying to the statement. We decided to use RIPE TTM for that. Next to the measuring of the compliance with the quality statement, we also use the TTM tests to debug our network if we see problems. As an added tool, we're of course having a lot of tools already available to debug network problems, but it has showed that this is a good addition to perform certain checks. We also use this for checking the network after maintenance windows. It's part of the standard procedure. Another interesting usage of the test boxes at our place is when customers ask about past problems or indicate they had problems and want our opinion about it. Then we can, next to the other tools, we can view the history of the TTM tests, and that gives an indication if it was a problem in our network or not. Next to that, we're also using the box as an NTP server. We're feeding our all equipment from these boxes. We're publishing the stats in 2 ways. Every month we make a monthly report. That's just the generated graphs from the plots on demand script. And we save them on our website and publish it every month next to the traffic statistics, the aggregated traffic, and S-flow statistics. Next to that, we have a real-time view of the TTM data. We're using the data stream that's available on the box for that. And we're plotting this data in real time. So this is probably all familiar to you. But this is the real-time view that we made. We're feeding from the raw data stream and saving it in our own files and publish this on the website. Same goes for packet loss. If you want to see more about it, the TTM real-time view is public. The monthly reports are, I believe, not public anymore, and the quality statement is also available on our website. Well, if there are any questions.
Comments, questions? No?
Good.
Well, then, thank you.
Okay.
The final presentation this afternoon is by Franz Schwarzinger, who will update us on the status of multicast monitoring.
Hello, good evening, afternoon. My name is Franz Schwarzinger from the Ripen CC. I've been telling you about multicast monitoring over the last two Ripe meetings as well, and I'll give you a status update, and some new things that we've been working on will be introduced. First of all, what is multicasting? Today, 97% of the internet use unicast, which is basically sending data from one host to one other host. Multicasting, as the name implies, data is distributed to many hosts. Two ways to do that, one to many, which a use for that would be media distribution like radio, TV, and many to many, I don't have a picture for that, but for group messaging that would be a possible use, but only a very small part of the internet supports this today, and with this project we are trying to encourage people to use it more widely and to have a way of testing their multicast. What was the motivation for that? In April 2006 a Ripe policy proposal was done, which was called Multicast Monitoring on Ripe NCC Test Traffic Boxes. And the proposal suggested that we should implement multicast beacon, multicast listeners, should make raw data available to interested parties, and there should be a way to pinpoint problems. The results of that can be viewed in this picture. It is all built, of course, on the TTM network. The brown stuff on the bottom is loads and loads of code that I will not bore you with, but we'll have a look at the other cool things that are a bit more on the top. First of all, we have a multicast beacon. It uses the open, well-known TTM packet format, as it's done by, with the unicast measurements as well. We use timestamps from the GPS clocks that each test box is attached to, and we're using a standard configuration of NCC GLOP addresses, so you don't have to waste your own multicast addresses, or if you don't have multicast addresses, we will provide one for you. The next thing is a listener. Actually, it's divided in two parts. First of all, we are performing one-way delay measurements within the TTM network. Those can do very accurate delay measurements because of the GPS clocks. And we're also supporting measurements from outside the TTM network. So you can configure your test box to listen to any multicast stream. And we have a nice configuration interface that gives you a couple of options on how you want to analyze this data stream. So you can enter, for instance, an expected rate, and it will do loss measurements for you. You can look after values that should be in the packet at a specified offset, and it will show you if these values really appeared in these packets. We also have an alarm system. It still uses the old alarm system that Mark addressed in his presentation, but we are hoping to move that to the new system when that is in place. And we do have a problem pin pointer. It works like this. Each test box traces the path to all configured groups, and that is approximately the data that we get from it. We get these paths to all the sources, and timestamps for that. We collect these once an hour, and what we first have to do is rule out the ones that are not within the current time. So we get rid of that, and then we group together the same IP addresses in all these paths. And that's done in this example in two steps, and we end up with the multicast distribution tree that we then present in a nice way on the RIPE-NCC website. You can have you can compare stuff with each other and see what parts of the multicast distribution tree appeared or fell away in a specific time. Unfortunately, we've been having some issues in the last few weeks with some multicast routers not replying to the multicast trace routes properly. So at the moment this is broken, but we will have it back up hopefully soon. Future plans. We want to do a global view on multicasting. Unfortunately, at the moment we only have 4 test boxes supporting this, but a fifth one is in is being installed and in progress. But once we have more than 5 test boxes, we want to do a global view and somehow a high-level problem pinpointer that will show you where your multicast streams are reachable and where they are not. We want to integrate this into the future services that have been proposed by Mark, be it ad hoc testing, centralized alarm system, or whatever will come. We are working on IPv6 support. It is already, the code is already in place. Until recently, we haven't had any possibility to test this, so it will take some more time to get this fully tested and fully running. And we will also support IGMP version 3 and source-specific multicast sometimes in the future. What do we need from you? Why are we here? We need definitely more probes that have multicasting enabled, more test boxes that where we can enable this multicast testing. So if you do have a test box, if you do have multicast routing on your network enabled, please send an email to ttops@ripe.net, and we will enable it for you and explain to you how you can use that. That was about it. Thank you for your attention. Any questions?
Comments, questions. So Brian, you're happy with V6 support?
If you come up with a question in a bit, I will be at the IS service stand opposite of the registration desk. You can visit me there and I'll give you some extra information, or if you have any input, everything is welcome.
Okay, and then the final item on this afternoon's agenda is any other business. Is there anything people want to raise for this working group? Or do you all want to go to the social? I guess not. So that's it, folks. Meeting is adjourned.
I might want to slow just show this one slide.
It's a one slide presentation called IPv6 not compatible with global warming, or so it looks. At the meeting venue, we always take a TTM box with us to measure in and outbound V4 and V6 delays. And this was like the V6 pattern we saw for the last few days. At first, we were quite puzzled about that, because it was more or less starting at around 1700 UTC and stopping at 7 UTC, the total amount of packet loss. When we finally installed a cooling device in the ops room yesterday, the V6 is stable again. So you could draw the conclusion that V6 is not compatible with a global warming trend if you would see our ops room as a mini environment where we could have proven this theory. And yeah, that was pretty much about it.
Nice slide. Okay. Any other business? No? Then meeting is adjourned. See you all tomorrow morning.
Groups, the similar ones together. tomorrow morning. Anyways, work.
You have not come yet, dinner.
No.
No, come on.
Yes.